Well, good morning. It's very nice to see everybody here today. I want to start by saying Happy Father's Day to all the dads that we have in our assembly today. Anybody who's watching online later on, Happy Father's Day to you as well. Even if it's tomorrow or later on or 2 years from now, Happy Father's Day. Becoming a parent is a very difficult task. You are asked to do a lot for a long time, but it's also a very rewarding task. We certainly hope that as fathers or as mothers, as parents, that we're able to impart in our children something more valuable than just the food that we put on a table or the savings that we're able to put away for later for college and that sort of thing, or the car that we maybe help them buy when they turn 16, 17, 18 years old. We certainly hope that the impression we leave is more than just that we took care of their material needs, but that we also were good stewards of their souls for the time that we were most influential in their lives. And that's what I want to talk about today, is the kind of fatherly wisdom that we can give while we have the opportunity. While they live in our homes and we have that direct influence on our children, are we helping to teach the path that is worth following in life? So have your Bibles to the book of Proverbs. Have your Bibles open right now to Proverbs chapter 4. And we're going to read a passage of Scripture here in Proverbs 4 and take note of several things as we go along. Notice here in Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 1, and we'll read the extended passage just to get the bird's eye view of it, and then we'll go back and look at a couple of things in greater detail in this lesson. So Proverbs chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. Hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. For I give you sound teaching. Do not abandon my instruction. When I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother, then he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments and live. Acquire wisdom. Acquire understanding. Do not forget, nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will guard you. Love her, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is this. Acquire it, and with all your acquiring, get understanding. Verse 8. Prize her, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a garland of grace. She will present you with a crown of beauty. Verse 10, hear my son and accept my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have directed you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in upright paths. When you walk, your steps will not be impeded, and if you run, you will not stumble. And I hope that at the end of 18 years, with that direct in-home influence, that my kids would be able to say the same thing about what I have taught them. And that I taught them more than just how to manage your finances and more than just how to maintain a car, how to do things around the house, how to use power tools. That I've taught them more than just life skills, but that I have taught them how to find that which is life indeed, which is in God's wisdom. I give you sound teaching, he says here in verse 1 and 2. Sometimes we think that the rift or the gap between children and parents is maybe the product of our tumultuous times. Maybe if you were raised in another generation, you see it as a product of the tumultuous 60s. Other people might see it as the product of the tumultuous 80s. Or as a product of the tumultuous now. It seems like every generation kind of sees itself as the generation that created the gap between parent and child. Like, we are so different from our parents. And every generation tends to see it that way, that we are so different from our parents. And yet that tendency toward the gap has always existed. And every generation of young people, every next generation of young people has to fight the temptation to disregard and toss aside the wisdom of their parents. Because they're always going to face that temptation to feel like they're smarter or more enlightened or that they know more than their dad or their grandpa, the people that raised them. And you know, maybe there are some things that do become more advanced as we go along. Maybe the pace of life has quickened a little bit. But when it comes to really living, there is nothing that's changed since Solomon's time as far as how to really live. Making good choices, loving the people in your life with an unselfish and caring love, putting God first in all things, knowing how to manage your time so that the right things are prioritized, those things have never changed. So maybe you're able to use a cell phone and you know how to program this or that, and the way that you live is faster paced. But the real things that make life meaningful, those things have not changed. I give you sound teaching. And things that are sound teaching 2,000 years ago, or 3,000 years ago, or even 50 years ago, things that were sound teaching in other generations, they're always sound teaching. Sound in this context means healthy, right? It's a healthy kind of teaching. And something that was healthy then, something that was right, something that was truth, something that was good, it's always going to be that no matter the generation. To me, this echoes David's sentiments in Psalm 19 and in verses 7 through 11 where he talks about the law here, truth. Psalm 19 says this, beginning in verse 7, "The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever." Enduring forever. Notice that. "The judgments of the Lord are true. They are righteous altogether." Those things don't change from generation to generation, which is why he says, "Do not abandon my instruction." Now, maybe there are some things from other generations that we're allowed to jettison. You know, we can have different styles than our parents, and that's okay. Though, I will say, and Ecclesiastes chapter 1 corroborates it, that a lot of these styles, a lot of the clothes and the trends from other generations, they just cycle through every few years or so. You know, that tie that your dad wore a few years ago, suddenly that tie becomes very popular and in vogue. The pants that your mom used to wear that you made fun of at one point, those pants suddenly become very fashionable. And I remember it wasn't that long ago that the high-waisted mom jeans were not cool. And suddenly I see like teenage girls wearing high-waisted mom pants now. Like, oh, hold on a second. It wasn't that long ago that you were making fun of the JCPenney mom jeans and now you're wearing them. All that stuff, it cycles through. It cycles through. But you know, there might be some things that we're allowed to jettison from other generations. But when it comes to truth, truth can't be jettisoned. Or at least it shouldn't be. When it comes to wisdom, sound teaching, when it comes to true doctrine, those things should not be cast aside. Do not abandon my instruction. Kids, remember what happens to people in the Bible who abandon their parents' wisdom. Now, I'm not saying that you have to follow in your parents' footsteps in every way. All right, my dad is an accountant. I would never become an accountant. I can't manage numbers, can't handle numbers. I have no idea what to do with them. My older brother, on the other hand, it's like he was destined to become an accountant and he's very good at it. But you don't have to follow in your parents' footsteps in every way, in that practical sense. But think about some of the characters from the Bible who abandoned their father's wisdom. Noah and his son Ham. Gideon and his son Abimelech. One generation to the next in Israel in Judges chapter 2. How about Samuel and his sons, worthless fellows like they were, 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 1 through 3. David and several of his sons, Absalom included. Jeremiah 6, verse 16 says, "Stand by the ways and see and ask for the ancient paths where the good way is, and walk in it, and you shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk in it." And the generation from Jeremiah's time was lost. That was a generation that was lost. And a just recompense came upon them in their time period. Well, let's move on in Proverbs 4 to verses 3 through 5. Notice again what he says here. "When I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, 'Let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments and live. Acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth.'" You know what I like about this is that nobody is born innately knowing how to live wisely. Now we might, as we go through life, we might by instinct or whatever you want to call it, pick up on a lot of life skills. Even by instinct or just kind of learning by trial and error, you can pick up on a lot of life skills. But you really do depend on other people for learning wisdom. You depend on other people for learning wisdom. This component of your life, just it doesn't come without effort and assertion and exertion by somebody else. To the parents in here, don't feel like you have to know everything right away. But I also feel like you have to go into parenting knowing that you know more than them. And have some confidence in the life experiences that you've accrued. And even if you're very young as a parent, or you can look back on your parenting, or remember, maybe you look back and you said, "I was too young when I had kids. I was too young." Well, you know what? You still knew more than them. And whatever life experiences you have accrued, pass those on to your kids. You have valuable things to pass on to them in terms of life experience. And your kids are depending on you. They are depending on you. Because I'll tell you what, and other people will say the same thing. If you're not going to teach your kids sound wisdom, there are plenty of people in the world who will volunteer themselves to teach your kids the wrong kind of wisdom. And those kinds of people are more than happy to teach their brand of life experience. If you won't teach them sound wisdom, other people will volunteer to teach their own brand. You have to be there for your kids. Now, you don't have to know everything right away, but you have to know some things and you have to depend on the life experience. Now, as a child, for the kids in here, don't feel like you're a total disappointment just because you're not as far along as your father or mother. Accept that and be okay with that. You're not as smart as your parents. You don't have the same life experience as your parents. And when you fail, when you make mistakes, that's okay. And they love you anyway. That's why they chose to be parents. Because they believe that they could bring somebody into this world, and if they depended on God for truth and for wisdom, that they could raise you in the fear and knowledge of the Lord. We are all born with the need to grow and learn and mature. In the same way that we long for physical milk, for physical food, we also need to long for spiritual food. And if we have failed to realize this, then we deny ourselves the rich pursuit of self-improvement and spiritual education. Which is why he says, acquire wisdom. Acquire it and acquire understanding. Those are things that you have to acquire. And notice here, this is coming from his father. He taught me and he said, acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. Now, the father can provide those things. The father can hand those things to the child. He can make those things available and accessible. But at the end of the day, you have to choose to take it. I can present truth to my kids the same way I present food on a plate. But I can't force them to eat it. Now, of course, if you're a clever parent, you can find all kinds of ways to get them to eat eventually. And you'll eat it and you'll like it or you'll eat nothing. I was looking right at them. It looked like I was looking at the willies there, but my kids are right behind you. And maybe there's a parallel there. Your kids need to eat their vegetables. They need to eat their meat. They need to eat whatever's on the plate, even if it looks gross and it's a yucky color. But if it's the right thing to eat, if it is the meat and the vegetables and the things they actually need to grow, that's a lot like wisdom, isn't it? Wisdom sometimes doesn't taste like what we want. Wisdom isn't the sweet candy of the world. Wisdom isn't dessert. Wisdom isn't cupcakes. Now, there's a reward at the end of wisdom that is as sweet as cupcakes and dessert. But sometimes wisdom is the meat and potatoes and the vegetables that we don't want to eat. Wisdom is the kale, right? It's the kale on the side of, like, you know, 40 years ago, kale was a garnish at the local buffet, right? It was a garnish at a steakhouse. And now suddenly you're putting kale in everything. Why do you need to ruin a blueberry smoothie with kale? I don't get that. Like blueberries are just fine on their own. It doesn't need kale. It doesn't make it better. But sometimes wisdom is like that. It's the thing that you need to eat to grow. But your kids whine at you, and I don't want to eat that. And they push the plate away so many times, and you give in and say, all right, fine. I'll just make you some Easy Mac for dinner. Now, that's the easy thing to do. Let's not compromise when it comes to wisdom, for sure. Because they might shove the wisdom away, shove it away, and eventually we might get so frustrated and so impatient that we just give in and say, all right, fine, don't accept that wisdom. We can compromise on this and that, compromise on our morals. I'll let you get away with that. Fine. And we say fine when it comes to those sorts of things. And we make those moral and spiritual compromises. But that's not what they need to grow. Acquire wisdom. Acquire understanding. Make it accessible and available to your children. And don't compromise when it comes to truth. Don't compromise. Now, what we're going to say here, wisdom doesn't come naturally. It has to be acquired. The opportunities do exist for us, though. And I can acquire wisdom in a number of ways. I can acquire wisdom when I look for the positive side of my suffering. There is wisdom to be found buried underneath physical suffering. I can acquire wisdom when I listen to my father's lectures instead of rolling my eyes and ignoring him. And trust me, my dad was an expert lecturer. He prided himself on that great skill. And he had some epic lectures. In fact, I just would have taken the spanking. Like, take your belt off and just whip me, Dad. The lecture was the far more excruciating punishment. But I can acquire wisdom when I listen, instead of just rolling my eyes and ignoring him. I can acquire wisdom when I swim against the current of society and follow God's path, as uncomfortable as it is. I can acquire wisdom when I decide to put away the video game and catch up on my Bible reading. I can acquire wisdom when I babysit and learn responsibilities and learn how to take care of another human life. That's something that teenagers can learn to do. You know, don't say no to babysitting opportunities. I always feel like babysitting is one of those things, one of those life skills that when you're a teenager, don't say no to those opportunities. Because trust me, people like me really depend on you. But when you're given the responsibility of taking care of another human life, that's that little foretaste of what it's like to become a parent someday as well. Don't say no to those kinds of opportunities. Or holding down a summer job. You know, maybe that summer job that you have when you're 17, maybe that's not something you're going to put on your resume 15 years later. Maybe that's not going to be the make or break thing that gets you into the college that you want one of these days. But when you can hold down just that summer job for 3 months, that's that little bit of wisdom, that little bit of life experience that prepares you for the next step up in terms of choices in life. And handle it responsibly also. How about I can learn wisdom when I sell everything that I have so that I can gain the pearl of great value. Like the parable says in Matthew chapter 13, verses 45 and 46. When you prioritize things and realize that wisdom really is that valuable. It really is that valuable. But he goes on to say here in verse 6 of Proverbs 4, "Of wisdom, do not forsake her. Love her, and she will watch over you." The path to life and wisdom must involve more than just a passing interest. You know, the video game comes out, and it's fun, and you play it, and you beat it, and then you toss it aside, and the next video game comes out. And the Marvel superhero movie, Rebecca and I were just talking about this just the other day, because we got to get caught up. You know, when you're old like me, kids, teenagers, when you're old like me, you just can't keep up with all the Marvel movies. There's a new one that comes out every 6 months, and we're like, wait a minute, which one is the one that can turn himself into... Like, you get so confused by all of it eventually. I'm behind on all of them. I got to get caught up. I just wait for them to come out on Netflix when they're free. But you know, it's like you watch the movie and it's fun and it's like eating a popcorn and then you're done with it. You say, when's the next one coming out? When's the next movie coming out? When's the next big thing? When's the next sequel? I took kids to Incredibles 2 on Friday night and they had a blast. We enjoyed it. Great family movie, whatever. And as soon as we got out of the theater, and I mean as soon as we walked out the door of the theater, Sterling turns around and says, I can't wait for the next Incredibles movie to come out. Like, well, son, let me tell you, it took them 14 years to make a sequel. Don't hold your breath that there's going to be a third one. But that's how it is, though. That's how it is. Wisdom is not a passing fancy. Wisdom is not just the topic du jour. Wisdom is not just the thing that's in vogue right now. It's not a fad. Wisdom doesn't come and go. Wisdom is what you build your life on. It's the foundation upon which you build everything else in your life. Do not forsake wisdom. Love her, and she'll watch over you. Love her, and she'll watch over you. Other verses in Proverbs say the same thing. Proverbs 4, verse 8, prize her and she will exalt you. Proverbs 3, verse 18, happy are all who hold her fast. Proverbs 8, verse 17, wisdom says, personified, I love those who love me. Proverbs 8, verse 34, blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, watching at my doorposts. The only way to truly acquire wisdom, my friends, is to be around her always, to pine for her, to admire her, to long for her, and to be committed to her. To be totally committed to wisdom. And if we treat wisdom this way, with this passion, with this commitment, wisdom will never elude us. Unfortunately, many of us lack the drive for such devotion to wisdom. We will be passionately invested in a football team or a job or an adulterer or a home renovation or whatever else we're pursuing. But are any of us in danger of being too in love with the pursuit of God's wisdom? James 1 verse 5 says of wisdom, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God who gives to all men generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But the caveat which James says is, you have to ask with the right motives. And if you're not asking with the right motives, you won't get wisdom. Now he goes on to say a little bit later in our text in verses 11 and 12 of Proverbs 4. He says, I have directed you in the way of wisdom. I've led you in upright paths. When you walk, your steps will not be impeded. And if you run, you will not stumble. I like this idea of I've led you in upright paths. Solomon means that he has not only taught his son the truth, but he's also tried to model it to the best of his ability. And I don't know at what point in his life Solomon wrote the book of Proverbs. And I understand that there are things about Solomon's life, especially in his later years, that are really hard to square away with some of the things that he wrote. You read the book of Proverbs, and there is a plethora of Proverbs in this book that you kind of scratch your head and go, I agree with that, and that's great wisdom. But Solomon, I don't know if you really followed your own wisdom in that one. I understand that. There might have been a point in his life, either very late in Solomon's life when he could have written this, where he's saying, I finally learned, I finally got it. After years of waywardness, after losing sight of God's wisdom and following the ways of my 700 wives and their idols, I finally get it now. Perhaps he wrote this very early in his life, before his wives turned his heart away from the Lord. I don't know. But here's my takeaway. Whether you're Solomon or anybody else, I've led you in upright paths means I have tried to live the wisdom myself. As fathers, we have to model that life. And we have to make it a path worth following. That's the title of the lesson, after all. A path worth following. Some of the things that stand out from my childhood. Whenever my dad did lecture us, he always had a Bible verse. It was always based on some truth from the Bible. Whenever we needed advice about something, some failure that we've committed, getting caught in a sin as teenagers or something like that, or if we just needed to learn something, if we needed to make a decision in life, go this way or that way, Dad, what do I do here? Dad always had a biblical concept on his lips. He always had a Bible verse that backed up what he said. And he wasn't a perfect man. And in hindsight, I think he totally would agree with this. In hindsight, he wasn't a perfect man. There were things that he did that he wished he could have done differently. I even asked him that when I was going to have my first child. I said, well, Dad, what would you have done differently? Or how would you have tried to go back and kind of, you know, what did you either regret or what would you have done differently? And there were a few things he said about his parenting that he wished he could have done a little differently. So I think he has an honest understanding of that, an honest assessment, and I do too, about my own parenting. But I give my dad a ton of credit, and I hope that my kids give me some credit for this as well, that if we at least try our very best to model the wisdom that we're teaching, that's going to go a long way toward helping our kids accept that teaching. It's one thing to say, do as I say, not as I do. It's another thing to say, do as I say, because I'm trying to do it as well. And that was kind of a tongue twister. I hope that came out the right way. I'm gonna watch the video later on YouTube, and I'm going to realize, like, oh, I said that wrong. It's one thing to say, do as I say, not as I do. It's another thing to say, do as I say, because I'm trying to do it. That's going to go a long way toward helping your kids accept that wisdom if you can at least try your best to model that teaching. If we want our children to be faithful Christians, we've got to be faithful Christians too. I mean, that's as simple as that. And we have to set the bar really high for ourselves. This is a simple thing that Alan and I have both said at different times, and we'll say it again, because every year we need to be reminded of this. It is very rare that if you are a Christian parent and you set the bar low, it is very rare. In my experience, and I think Alan has said the same thing, it is very rare that if you set the bar low for yourself, that your kids are going to exceed you. That is very rare. It's if you set the bar at, I'm going to be really faithful at coming on Sundays, and every now and then I'll show up on a Wednesday night for a Bible study. Your kids will not meet that expectation. They will almost always go the next step lower. Well, if Wednesday wasn't important to mom and dad, then it's not going to be important to me. It's going to be even less important to me. If you set the bar at, well, I don't personally use a lot of swear words, but I don't mind bringing them into the home and we watch TV shows with a lot of swear words. If that's the bar that you've set for yourself, your kids are not going to exceed that. Because all their friends are going to use those words that you don't use, but you welcome them into the home. Your kids are not going to exceed that bar that you've set for yourself. Well, you know, I don't get drunk. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. But you know what? I drink every now and then, having a beer with dinner. That's the bar I've set. your kids will not exceed that bar that you've set for yourself. Now, I understand. Somebody might come and say, well, Ryan, that didn't happen in my family, or I exceeded my... I know there's exceptions to that. I'm saying as a general rule, if you keep a real low bar for yourself, as a general rule, your kids are not going to exceed that bar. They won't. Set the bar really high. Expect the most from yourself and expect the most from your kids as well. Expect the most. And I think God expects that from us as well. When you walk, he says, your steps will not be impeded. And if you run, you will not stumble. While the faithful life does come with a lot of distractions, and the faithful life may come with a lot of troubles and trials. Matthew chapter 10, right? Jesus never promised his disciples in Matthew 10 that that life would be easy. In fact, he promised them in Matthew chapter 10 that the world will hate you on account of me. And if they hated me so much, they're going to hate you as much as well. And they're going to persecute you. And brother will give up brother. And they'll take you to court because of your faith. Jesus didn't just... He promised them persecution because of their faith. Romans 8 verse 18, 1 Peter 4 verses 12 through 16, don't be surprised at the fiery ordeal which comes among you, as though some strange thing were happening to you. Don't be surprised when you're persecuted. So yes, there are impediments to the faithful life, but I'll tell you something, my friends. We are not nearly as impeded in our lives as the sinner. We are not nearly so filled with trouble on such a deep spiritual level as the sinner. We are not facing such dire spiritual circumstances and the outcome of a life wasted as the sinner. So when Solomon says, when you walk, your steps will not be impeded. When you run, you will not stumble. He means it in the grandest sense possible. In your eternal spiritual life. Now, if you're not a Christian here this morning, you really ought to be. If you're a parent and you're not a Christian, your kids are looking up to you. They're waiting to see with this whole God thing, this whole Jesus thing, this whole religion thing. Your kids are waiting to see, what are mom and dad going to do about that religion thing? What path are they choosing in their life? Your kids are waiting to see. Now, maybe your parents weren't Christians and you're here this morning and you're not a Christian. You can look at your own parents and maybe they weren't teaching sound wisdom, but their life, even their life of unfaithfulness, is leaving an example for you to either follow or reject. Choose life. Choose wisdom. Choose faith today. Whatever spiritual need you have, please let it be known by coming forward as we stand.